Good morning and welcome. Today we have with us the lovely Rachel, and Rachel is from Nucleotide Nutrition. And I was privileged to meet Rachel at the ANH's little celebratory bash back in the summer, and we sat on the same table. We had a big old chinwag. But of course, Nucleotide Nutrition is something that we all should know about. So with that put aside, how are you
today? Oh, I'm fine, thank you very much. Yes,
good, good. Nice sunny day.
It's very sunny out there.
Where are you?
It was a bit chilly. Took the dogs out this morning at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, chilly.
Definitely autumn.
Yes. Oh well. Yes, it's very sunny here, but I'm in a microclimate apparently. So it's Chichester is a microclimate. So there we go. So tell me, what was I going to say? Yeah, so tell me, first of all, you work, I know, with somebody who actually sort of kind of discovered the benefits of nucleotides. So do you want to tell us a little bit about the company, how you got involved, and, anything about the sort of, the passion behind it before we get into the details of what actually nucleotides are?
Yeah, and no problem at all. In fact, I would say that 95% of my working life has been to do with nucleotides. My very first job, I'll date myself, going back into the late 80s, was to look for new products and new ideas. And I found a very strange little outfit, little company in Switzerland, who were producing products which then... Well, it took me a few years to find out more about the products. They were very secret about them, but they were actually nucleotides. And I met there the pioneer of nucleotide supplementation, who's Dr. Peter Koerpel, who you met at the little shindig that ANH
had. He's so lovely as well. I mean, not that particularly matters, but he kind of does. It's nice energy, ultra sweetie.
He and I have known each other for decades now, and he did the initial work looking at what the infant formula companies had done with mimicking breast milk, mother's breast milk, which meant that they were looking to see whether if they supplemented nucleotides into infant formula, they could actually get it to work better. And what they found in with a lot of clinical trials that are all out there, published work, they found that it helped support the immune system and immune development and gut development of a newborn. So that's why over the years it's become a mandatory nutrient in infant formula. So 0 to 6 months, you'll find that most infant formula has got nucleotides added in. So what
because in breast milk, for example, there might be that element there, but it isn't in
formula. Yeah, I mean, breast milk has got high levels of nucleotides in there. There are five main types of nucleotides, the purines, two purines and three pyrimidines. And there are high levels in breast milk. In fact, they vary in terms of their ratio, their formula in breast milk, depending on the time of day, because there is one or two of the nucleotides that help promote sleep. So in the evening milk, quite often the nucleotide content is different in breast milk than, say, compared with earlier in the day. It's amazing.
That's so clever, isn't it?
Yeah, but infant formula, they can't be as clever as that. So there's a sort of a standard formula that they have to adhere to, which has got more pyrimidines than purines, because quite simply pyrimidines are a bit more difficult to make or find than the purines. So that was the stimulus, if you like, for Peter Koerpel, who's a biochemist immunologist, to have a look at whether sort of supplementing adult diets with nucleotides would have a similar response. But before we got to the humans, we started with the animal nutrition. At the time, there was a lot of antibiotics used in these stressed farm animals, intensively farmed animals, and the utopia was to find a natural type product so that you could actually remove a lot of the antibiotics out of animal feed. So that's where he initially did his work, and indeed that's where I started, and we did a lot of if you like, looking at the health of farm animals across the species, even from fish, salmon, through to pigs, poultry. And we did, Peter's probably done about 400 research projects with animals, and I've been involved in all the ones here in the UK. And one of the things that we found consistently was the impact of supplementing nucleotides on the gut. What we were generally be able to see over a 3-week period was that a stressed gut lining, which would have a lot of holes in, and the villi would be rather shortened and broken up over a 3-week period where nucleotides were supplemented, that become the whole of the gut would transform in terms of the morphology, that the height of the villi would be enabled to grow to the normal levels. So they might be 25% higher than 3 weeks prior. And also there were less lesions in the gut, so there were less holes. The overall surface area was much higher. And this was consistent across a lot of work. So these animals were reduced in stress, really, so there was less damage to the gut. And also the nucleotides were ready access. They were purer nucleotides, so that the gut cells could actually make use of them immediately rather than having to break down from the food, because animals, humans all need to get nucleotides from food. There are certain cells in the body.
Why is there, you know, obviously for the animals with the antibiotics, that's where the damage is.
So they were, the end of that is, yes, antibiotics are used less now in animal feeds, and nucleotides are part of the nutritional regime. So they're all that work. And then it led to us saying, well, this will work for humans because we're all animals. You, me, we're like pigs.
Well, some of them small than others, I might say, after. Luckily, it's only up to here, the screen.
So we had enough clues to then do all the work in the animal side. And we got grants to do clinical trials. There are very few products out there, food supplements, that have actually got clinical trials with the formula of the product, you know. We spent, you know, quite a number of years doing human clinical trial work and got some amazing results. And it really has mimicked, you know, the work that we've done with poor old stressed animals. It's been quite a journey, but it's been great.
Out of the corner of my tiny brain, you're talking about purines and obviously people like, isn't it Gundry, Dr. Gundry is sort of, doesn't he highlight purines as being something that might not be a good thing? And why does he think that? And tell me about that.
Okay, well, purines feature a lot in our food. But for some people, they have a problem with processing them. They don't have the necessary digestive equipment, if you like, to turn the purines into the uric acid and for it to be excreted, and they end up having issues potentially with things like gout. So a lot of people are fine with purines. It's not a problem. It goes through the pathways and it all gets, the byproducts get excreted, whatever. So purines are required by the body. I mean, if you imagine DNA and RNA, both of those molecules need purines. They also need the pyrimidine. But the situation for somebody who, say, is prone to gout means that if there's too much purines coming in, then they can't cope with that. They don't get excreted and ends up, you know, causing crystals and lots of pain. Now, the thing that what we have looked at and in terms of developing the formula by, you know, the work that Peter's done, is that we've focused on the fact of looking what is deficient in food. And quite clearly, the work's shown that it's the pyrimidines type that are in deficiency. And more, as we move away from foods like offal, you know, the nucleotide dense foods, you know, and vegetarian and vegan diets tend to be very low in nucleotides, and particularly the pyrimidine type. So the formula that has been developed and has been used in our clinical trial work and now in our products has been very much pyrimidine dominant and not so much of the purines, because we're trying to balance, if you like, what people are getting from the diet. So if you're actually having a formula which has got more pyrimidines, you're not going to interface with problems like gout, because, you know, the pyrimidines go down a different pathway, don't go down that uric acid issue.
I say, I just remembered he wasn't on about purines, he was on about lectins. But anyway, yes, never mind.
That's a different kettle of fish.
That's a completely different kettle of fish. So sorry, I stand corrected by myself. But
I'm glad you said it, because it is. People do have very rational fears, if you like, of trying something new. And nucleotides will be new for a lot of people to get around. And, you know, so it's important that we don't just, you know, try and hide these things under the carpet and provide a scientific explanation as to why taking one of our products with the formula, which we call Nutritide, why that will have much less chance of a problem occurring, you know, with that sort of issue.
So is it the in effect in if people do get gout, is it a balance problem, meaning they're getting far too many of one rather than the other? Or is it just like, actually, if you're prone to gout, then even a little bit of purine isn't a good thing?
Well, somebody who gets gout has got sort of a medical condition, for one. And then they need to make sure they don't hit excess amount of purines, because the body still needs to be able to produce these cells, particularly in the gut. The gut lining and the bifidobacteria, they all need nucleotides to replicate, and they need the nucleotides to come from the diet in the main. So, you know, even someone with gout needs to have the purines, because, you know, these molecules, DNA and RNA, which need to be formed in the replication process, you know, require purines and pyrimidines in a 50% proportion. So, but it's trying to remove the excess. And I think the other thing about having a formula which has got more pyrimidines in is that you can actually mop up some of those excess purines, because you're providing, you know, a more deficient type of nutrient with something like the Nutritide formula.
So you intimated that it's, you know, offal, you know, sources of pyrimidine might be, and purines might be through offal, and you know, obviously we don't have that in the diet
No. So
widely now.
No.
So is that the only source, or there are other sources, and are there any other reasons why it's deficient, or is it just mainly that we're not eating those foods?
Well, I mean, all cells in food will have a proportion of DNA and RNA in there, so potentially all foods would be able to yield nucleotides if there was enough time resident in the gut. But there are some foods which have a much higher proportion of nucleotides, and therefore the digestive process can break enough of that down to release whilst it's in the small intestine. So The highest would be your offal type. So that could be tripe or liver or kidney, those types of things, which have gone down. There was a survey, a big UK government survey, looking at what people ate. And it started in the 70s and finished only a few years ago. And what they found was there was about, back in the 70s, on a weekly basis, there were sort of these questionnaires found out what people were buying. And they were like, there was like 30 grams a day of liver, whereas compared with now, it's 3. So, I mean, so
I don't think it's even 3, is it? Because I mean, I think if anybody was in the 70s, like my good self, you know, basically school liver massively was the end of your love affair with liver for a start, because it was like, I can't even explain to you how disgusting that was. But it was all in the cooking. Mm. But you know, you might have inspired me to resurrect my organic chicken liver pate, which is absolutely chicken liver pate is delicious. You know,
I know
that's not to everybody's taste, but the fact is, you know, it's nose to tail eating. So you know, in kind of dismissing the offal, you know, we're really just what you call it, binning, which is awful. Most of the animal. And,
I mean, it used to be a staple. In fact, what they used to do is would be offal in with, like steak and kidney pie, for instance, would be an example. But then you've got lots of dishes where they would have a little bit of offal in as well. So you'd be getting that sort of nutrient dense food almost daily. Whereas now when we have liver, we have it as a one-off, don't we?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. So so the diet and what we eat has changed a lot. And what I want to reassure, like a vegan or a vegetarian, or that there are foods that have got reasonable levels of nucleotides in there. You got broccoli. I mean, broccoli is always a star. Broccoli of the vegetables has got the highest, one of the highest levels of nucleotide content. Not up to the level of offal, but it's pretty good. Mushrooms, and then some of the vegetable proteins will have reasonable levels too.
So I had for my dinner last night, broccoli and mushrooms. I'm feeling. Yeah, you know, I should have added some liver onto that. I would have been a star.
Yeah, if you catch a vegetable at a sprouting stage, so this including so generally sprouts, what you've got is the cells are at the highest activity. They've got a tremendous amount of RNA in there. So actually, if you can catch all your vegetables at a sprouting stage, you will get a higher level of nucleotide content. But one of the what I can say is that, so somebody who's a vegetarian or vegan will have a lower content of nucleotides, particularly pyrimidines in their diet. Somebody who is a sort of an omnivore and paleo, and they're having the proper paleo where they've got all the offal and all that, then they all have a good nucleotide level coming in on a daily basis. But
so what might be the consequences? I mean, you mentioned gut health, and actually, funnily enough, sorry, I don't want to divert too much, but I did a seminar on Friday for some accountants.
Lucky you.
It's like no, sweet, very sweet.
Oh,
nothing wrong with accountants. We need everybody in this world, I tell you. But they're sort of, funnily enough, not really my gang. They thought I was completely and utterly mad. Mm. But that's okay. But anyway, one of these ladies had a son who's been recently diagnosed with celiac. So I'm wondering, you know, obviously in light of, and basically the doctor said that that I can't remember what they were sort of treating him with, but they said that, you know, you basically it's impossible to grow your villi back in less than, I don't know if they said 2 years, but 6 months or some quite long length of time. Is it helpful in something like somebody with gluten? Well, that was obviously celiac.
Yeah.
Is there a downside or?
Yeah, well, someone who's been diagnosed with as a celiac will have been taking in gluten, obviously, up to that diagnosis, and their gut villi will be largely destroyed. So in order to regenerate, a vast amount of nucleotides are required. And obviously, a large proportion of those will need to come from the diet, because the salvage pathway and de novo just won't be able to produce enough, and will actually sap a huge amount of energy out of somebody, because obviously to salvage and to produce these types of molecules will take up energy. So it's, you know, if you've got a large requirement for nucleotides and you're not getting a good amount from your diet of all the types, so pyrimidine and purine, then it is an energy absorbing process and can be quite take a long time to do that. So we see, and Peter has actually, Dr. Kirpel has actually put together a scientific statement on celiac and nucleotide supplementation following diagnosis, because we are absolutely sure, you know, because we've had case studies coming back from celiacs, that we can play a very good part in helping to restore that villi structure in a far quicker way than if you didn't use our products, if you like, because it's actually providing ready-made, if you like, nucleotides directly for the gut to take on, and it's also to help the gut flora flourish too.
Have you got that paper available to send me, and I'll send it on to this lady? That would be really useful, because as I'm saying, you know, obviously I can sort of tell her to look at the paper and take it or leave it as advice. You know, obviously I'm not her practitioner.
No.
But, you know, I'd love to send that on to her, because I think they're really looking for, what you call it, they're looking for something to help. Don't forget, because I'm really interested in that. So the gut is obviously a major area where nucleotides can help. But is there any other sort of function of nucleotides generally, or is it really the power lies in the gut?
Well, the power does lie in the gut, but also there are other cells in the body that require nucleotides from the diet, and bone marrow cells are a prime example. So as a generalization, the cells that require a rapid expansion require dietary nucleotides to help supplement what the body can produce and break down for itself. If you imagine, if the immune system is triggered by a virus or an infection, the amount of cells that need to be produced in order to quell that and fight it off is outstanding. And I couldn't even begin to quote the number. These numbers go out of my head. So that is the reason why dietary nucleotides are so important for the immune response, because if you can actually have ready-made nucleotides available, then you can affect a quicker and more effective response. So the white blood cells, red blood cells, the gut lining cells, things like bifidobacteria. There are certain brain cells as well, but we haven't really looked at that ourselves. But those are the cells that we can have a major impact on. So the immune response, the gut, are the two main areas. The gut's involved with so much.
It's activating the immune system through bone marrow.
Yeah, it's not specifically activating it. I mean, if you take nucleotides, it's not just activating the you know, it's not a stimulant,
but it's part of the ingredients of the cake, so to speak.
It's an enabler, it's a facilitator. It enables that production of cells to take place because you're providing the building blocks it needs, the DNA and the RNA, and it can supplement and it can save energy. So one of the first things that we would expect to be felt by somebody taking our products is that they have a little bit of a release of energy, because it's actually saving the body some energy from having to really ramp up production by actually providing ready-made molecules as well.
So obviously, when we think about DNA and RNA, we're thinking about aging, aren't we? So what about the effects on, you know, aging generally? I mean, obviously, it's an inevitable thing. I speak for myself. But
yeah, I've got a big one next week.
Have you? You've got the big one. Well, you know, when we finish this call, just stay on for a couple of minutes because I want to talk to you about that. But yes, but no, well, I mean, it depends on what big one you mean, like 40, you know,
you're,
that's what you're
talking
about, isn't it, Rachel? You're talking about 40, really.
Well, I feel 40, but got another 20 years.
You know what, I feel about 11, but you know, that's just because I'm so silly, but I do try and curb that in. Usually, if I'm in polite company. But yeah, no, absolutely. It's a part of it is attitude as well. But obviously, you have to have the energy, don't you? You really have to have the energy to be able to sort of deliver what you need to deliver in life, don't you? Definitely. So so aging wise, obviously, it's going to have a repair mechanism on the cells, isn't it? So, so talk us through that a bit of how it might affect aging.
Yeah, well, I mean, aging is a whole number of different things, isn't it? It's not just how you look in terms of whether you've got a lot of wrinkles, or, you know, your skin is starting not to look so buoyant. It's not just that; it's how you feel. And if you're deficient in energy, then you feel older. You know, what a supplement that provides these building blocks can do is to enable the body to work more effectively in terms of almost like going back to the basics. If you can use a product that can help make your gut flourish, what it means is, and especially in terms of absorbing, if you can help other supplements and food itself be absorbed better because you've got a more flourishing gut, then it means that everything, all this, these nutrients can go to the places where it's needed. So that's one layer of how you can help a healthy aging process. Now, in terms of repair, we've done work, and there is other work out there where we've seen and they've shown that supplementary nucleotides can actually help the DNA repair processes. So it can help to mend, if you like, degradation that's going on in the cells. So it's quite a young area, excuse the pun, in terms of research, but and quite nicely, a lot of the research hasn't been done by us, which is always better because, you know, we're commercially implicated. The work done is that you can help the repair of DNA once it started, and it is a really exciting area because, you know, the utopia is that you know the last sort of 30% of your life you can live it in a nicer, healthier, more active way, and as an offshoot maybe even look a bit younger. That has got to be what we all aim for, and that's why you know, health practitioners, nutritional therapists want people to eat good food, because that's half the battle. You know, fresh food, the right food, non-processed food. And then you look at the other things, other types of supplements that can help on top of that. And obviously, I would position nucleotide supplements as a, one of the first things in there if you're looking for a healthy aging.
Well, yeah, it seems like if it's going to help gut efficiency and you need to absorb your nutrients, then obviously, you know, before you pile in a load of nutrients, then make sure the gut is really working really well. Yeah. You know, that seems to stand to reason, really. I mean, from the DNA damage point of view, is it for DNA damage that you may have caused through medication or other means, is it also, do you think, got a relevance? I mean, if you've damaged yourself in any way, your DNA or anything?
Yeah, well, the research that we have done is looking at oxygen radicals, you know, oxidative stress, and the impact of oxidative stress on things like lymphocyte cells. And what it was a German researcher, and it's published paper, and I can provide all of this information. But what they found was where the nucleotides were supplemented, the oxidative stress showed up. What's the best way of describing this? What they do is they're like a comet test. And the comet test, what it does is it shows how intact the DNA is. So in the comet head is the whole DNA. And then if it's been fragmented, then you get a tail. I don't know if that my hand's slow enough here. So you get like the head, the intact DNA, and then you get a tail of fragments. So what they found was where oxidative stress has occurred is the head's a bit smaller and you get a more of a tail of fragmentation. And what they found was that if they added in the nucleotide supplement, which was our formula, that head remained more intact and there was less of a tail. So it was like a more normal situation before the oxidative stress was applied. So it's a beautiful trial, and it shows these lovely comet photos of the impact of, firstly, the impact of oxidative stress is, and that is breakdown of DNA. And then secondly, how by actually changing something in nutrition, you can repair that damage or a proportion of that damage just by paying attention to what's going in the food.
So presumably it also affects the sort of downstream stuff like inflammation and everything like that, because it's a sort of upstream
absolutely
curb to that. So a useful, I mean, obviously we live in an inflammatory world, you know, like through diet, lifestyle, all the rest of it. So it's interesting how that might really affect. And obviously you intimated it, you hadn't done the research on brain health, but presumably it's a sort of systemic look at how upstream processes can affect downstream, like inflammation, and therefore inflammatory conditions, therefore things like depression. You know, I think we can can we make that sort
definitely an inflammatory condition would be an area that nucleotide supplement would have a positive effect. Well, one thing I would like to say is that nucleotides aren't everything. You know, supplementing with nucleotides won't replace a shortage of vitamin D or vitamin C. You know, if you really want to have a good impact, you have to make sure that you cater for a lot of deficiencies. But what I would say about the nucleotide supplements is that if you can help that gut lining and the absorption, then there is a better chance that some of these other nutrients that are sort of on the edge of becoming deficient, that they will absorb better. So it, you know what I mean? It is it's got almost a secondary effect in helping other types of nutrients absorb better, making more, if you are supplementing with, you know, other nutrients, and those will become hopefully more effective. It's but I wouldn't want anyone to think that, you know, nucleotides are the only thing that you need, because that's absolutely not the case. It's in the end, it's the impact of a variety of essential nutrients. We like to think of the nucleotides as being conditionally essential, and for some really does become essential because of what, like a celiac, for instance, I would say it becomes starts to become essential.
So for a general, I always ask this question, because I mean, for a generally well person like my good self, you know, but mind you, you know, being an NT, of course, we love to try free stuff, not free, but sort of stuff that we can try. Yeah. Hence the box scheme is very, very popular.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to take part in that.
Yeah, so that'll be exciting. But you know, we've got so much sort of competing, what do you call it, kind of noise for different things. I mean, from my point of view, I think it's a really no-brainer if, you know, if you can give me an advantage of a generally well person like myself, because I have another sponsor of ours, a sort of green formula, which we just, you know, I just take that every day. And so it's easy just to add some of these things in. I add some mushrooms in, and you know, it's just because the nucleotides come in powder, so don't they?
Well,
you just shove them in, you know, it's just like, what's not to like?
The formulas are all powder. The we have three products which I would call our consumer products, and they have the nucleotide formula, and they're combined with specific vitamins and amino acids. One for the immune health, which is Nucel IM. There's the Intestate IB, which is for gut health, and that has a different set of vitamins and amino acids alongside.
That could be just quite a general formula, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, health starts in the gut, so, you know, you can use that generally.
So, and we have a sports product, which I won't touch on at the moment. But the Nucel and the Intestate, we have in capsules. But the one which we've developed specifically for the health practitioner is actually the Nutritide NT, which is a powder product, a soluble powder product. And that's got more therapeutic levels of the formula, but it doesn't have any additional vitamins and amino acids, which means that it's easier to slot into a patient protocol. You don't have to make adjustments for vitamin C or, you know, because we haven't got them in the product. So that is soluble. It's brilliant for just putting in a smoothie or a warm drink. I wouldn't put it in your coffee because I wouldn't want to spoil your coffee. I wouldn't want to, you know, somebody get angry at me for spoiling their coffee.
But it's not spoiled by heat, in effect, is what you're saying as well.
No, it's not. It could go in. I have my nucleotides often in hot water. But heat, if you left it in, you know, heat for a long time, then it would start to spoil things. But certainly short term, no, the heat won't have any impact. It's not not like a, you know, it's not a live thing. It doesn't get broken down very easily.
So I was going to say, so what's your sort of what do you take it for? I mean, you know, obviously, such a young person as yourself, you know, do you, it's just general well-being, general kind of like keeping on top of the things we've talked about, which is obviously, you know, immune, gut, brain inflammation.
Yeah,
it sounds like it's a sort of general shove it in, and it's something that we're lacking in our diets and lifestyles these days. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, I take it. I think there's a dog in the background. I take the nucleotide, and I have done. I mean, I was one of the first guinea pigs. Fortunately, it hasn't turned me into one. So I've been taking nucleotides now since the 90s. So a long time. And my feeling is that it's helped. When I first started taking it, what I noticed first, I used to get terrible allergies, hay fever type things, and I used to get infection in my eyes, and that stopped. I still had some symptoms of allergies, you know, hay fever, but it stopped the process of going into an eye infection. And then I also noticed that if I got a cold, it didn't go onto my chest. I was prone to getting it go onto my chest. So those are the two things I noticed first. I'm also into sport, less so now. I play golf, so some people don't think that's even a sport, but so I've always taken nucleotides and hoped it for my physical effort, because the other thing we haven't touched on, and we could spend hours talking about these things, but protein synthesis needs a lot of nucleotides, not the protein itself, but in terms of making it, to the transcription and the translation all required loads of RNA molecules, and they need nucleotides. So in terms of if you're active and you're wanting to develop your muscles and keep fit, then there's a lot of protein synthesis. So that's one of the reasons why I would take a supplement. But the other thing for me, and more personal, is that as a baby, I was born in the Far East, and it wasn't discovered until I had my baby that I had actually got antigens to hepatitis B. Now, I'd never had any symptoms, but since then, I've been advised to keep my liver very healthy. And that is, and I get tested every year, and my liver is very healthy, fortunately, because what they don't want is for the virus to reactivate. So I take, personally, from a medical point of view, I take my nucleotides to support my liver, because the liver is the organ where most of, in terms of the de novo production of nucleotides, where that generation takes place. So the more I can protect the liver and save it at some extra effort by taking the purified forms, then the better from my own point of view.
Well, it's interesting because I have a genetic liver. I mean, I think it's a sort of pathway thing, probably. It doesn't detoxify very well, my liver. But I mean, that my whole family was the same, aunts and uncles and people. So, so that might be a sort of, you know, I think everybody, you know, all of us have some kind of weakness, don't we?
Yeah, we have.
And so it's interesting. So, really fascinating. I mean, you know, because we love all this stuff in nutrition. I think it just sounds like a really great base sort of product that you put in as a sort of like a helper elf.
Yeah. Helper elf. Very nice.
But, you know, that's in effect packaging things and helping. You know what I mean? It's taking the the workload off other things. Mm. It's actually a sort of, as I say, it's a really downstream thing as opposed to an upstream. So I think that sounds really, really exciting. So you just do the four products in effect. Is that your... Yeah, so it's quite neat and succinct. But perfectly formed, so to speak, which is...
Yeah.
How have you found the acceptance in accepting nucleotides as something that people feel they need to do? Or has it been sort of quite an uphill struggle to make people see, nucleotides?
I have to say it has been harder than I anticipated. It was easier with the animals because they don't make the decisions, for one, and you can show so much easier in a trial where you've got it in the food, because they you know, if you do work with humans will eat anything. I mean, and they won't always necessarily eat what they're supposed to, and compliance is not very good. And so what I've found is that working in an area where people haven't been trained health practitioners will all know what nucleotides are, but they will not have been trained in nucleotides in a specific way, and certainly won't have been trained to think of them as a nutrient that could be deficient. You know, we've almost had to put that educational material together, and I do know now it is incorporated in some of the programs, nutrition programs. But you know, we've almost had to, as pioneers, put the education together, and we've got fortunately enough different clinical trials to sort of fit a lot of the jigsaw pieces together to help from an educational point of view. So I'm working.
To access that. Sorry to interrupt. So people who want to access the education, obviously you can come back here and we can do a more formalized kind of education piece if you want. You know, that would be great. But otherwise, can they access the education somewhere else? And how do they do
that? Yeah, I mean, I've got so many different types of resource in terms from, you know, webinar presentations to individual scientific statements that Peter Koeppel has put together. You know, the webinars probably are the best places to start because that takes you through the story. And in fact, I have got, I don't know if I can share a screen or something, but I have got a lovely presentation that takes you through the story. And it's not very long, but it gives you all the salient points and some lovely infographics.
Sorry, you're on mute. So let me see if I can, I don't want that one. Hold on, caller. I'm trying to faff around here. Hold on. There you go. I've allowed the screen to be shared. So
have you? Right, let me have a look. Oh, lost it completely. There we go. Well, where are we? I seem to have lost the picture. Oh, there we are. I'm back again. I'm trying to look for my share screen now. Let's have a look. Share screen. Okay. Hopefully I've got it. There we go. So can you see that screen?
Yes. Sorry, I had myself on mute. It was like a technically challenged here.
I'm glad this is a nice friendly chat and we don't have to be too professional.
No, I mean, I'm letting the side down horribly here.
I'm going to full screen mode. So this is a presentation, and we won't go through it in as much as I'm not going to give you the presentation, you'll be pleased to know. But what I will do is I'll just give you a flavour of what we have here. So we've got, you know, what nucleotides are and DNA and RNA and how they're made up of the different nucleotides. And, you know, new cell production. So they, you see that as a nucleotide pool. So the purified nucleotides can go in there and help that cellular replication. And you've got, I'm telling you about how many cells there are in the body. And so therefore how many nucleotides might be required. And that's why our own body own production is pretty high and needs support. Different ways of getting your nucleotides, you know, what's on our plate in terms of the difference between liver and an apple, how much nucleotides they supply. What we get on a plate at a typical buffet, if you're an omnivore or a vegan, so nearly half the amount if you're a vegan. And then reasons why there may be.
So Rachel, and if you are a vegan, obviously you can supplement. That might be grand. But what are the sort of immediate, or what are the sort of slow effects of deficiency? I mean, is it just a sort of general peaking off of kind of vitality, or is there something that you'd say, okay, that's probably a nucleotide issue?
Well, I would say the first thing that you would probably find, it depends on how much stress you have on yourself as well, but if you're a vegan and you eat lots of sprouts and, you know, as I said, broccoli and mushrooms, you will get a reasonably good level.
It's about being a good vegan, I think, you know. Sometimes I think people just aren't, I'm not making a judgment call on the good or bad vegan, but it's sort of like a good vegan, meaning a dedicated vegan who's looking at all the resources they need, as opposed to just eating pies, you know, that they've picked up at the garage.
There's still a lot of processed food that's really not delivering a lot of nutrients. I think the first thing that would be noticed is sort of energy levels.
Yeah.
And then if you have a consistent, you know, deficiency over a longer period of time, you're going to be more prone to chronic disease, you know, particularly, say, gut disorders, or maybe your response to getting a cold or, you know, another virus or one of the dreaded ones around at the moment, you're perhaps going to be less likely to be able to fight it off because you haven't got that immediate availability in your diet to at a level that's needed to really tackle it. So it's those sorts of things that we would expect to experience. But over time, if you, like with most things, if you have a shortage over a long period of time, then you're more likely to come down with something chronic. And that's what I would expect. But energy would be the first thing I think you would be short of. So there's a little bit on the sorts of trials that we've had. So showing we can maintain a higher antibody level in some of the stress trials that we've done. Also lowering the cortisol stress hormone levels under high stress situations.
Sure. What's the mechanism for that? That lowering cortisol?
Oh, why do you ask me that question?
Okay, I'm like, moving on. Nothing to see here.
I'm only joking, really. I think it's not fully understood. I think it's more likely to be a gut effect, but also an impact on helping the liver, supporting the liver. It will be a combination of things that the nucleotides can help.
So you might also help with things like insulin resistance and insulin, you know, sort of what you call it, progression.
Blood sugar regulation.
Yes, that's what I'm looking for. The short version.
That is the latest scientific statement that Dr. Kirpel's put together. And in fact, I'm giving a presentation tomorrow on this to a BANT group on blood sugar regulation and the effect of nucleotides. So that presentation I'll have available shortly, but not before I give an exam, finished it yet, and it's got to be done tomorrow. But yes, so that blood sugar regulation, you know, the nucleotides can have direct but also indirect, because if you imagine, if we can help the absorption of other nutrients, then they're going to be more effective, you know. So it's not entirely clear all the time exactly how a nutrient can have an impact. That's why you need to do trials to show that actually it does. And that's it. So, you know,
one time, come back and do the more. I mean, once you've given the BANT presentation for those members, or, you know, of our group, I mean, a lot of us are BANT members anyway, but a lot of us aren't. So it might be a good thing to come back and do that blood sugar thing, because I think everybody has that as the backbone of the nutrition, apart from the gut, is that piece, really.
Yeah, well, I would be delighted.
Wow. I mean, you know, it's fantastic. It's, I mean, obviously, as you've intimated, it's not magic, nothing is, but it is a helping hand in so many mechanisms. As I say, it's the helper elf, isn't it? You know, really.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to nick that off you if you don't
mind.
Yes,
why not? Absolutely. Well, it only applies to you. I don't think I've ever used it before. So helper elf is yours. You may have it as my gift.
Thank you. I'll send you a pot.
As a little payment.
Yeah.
Well, I should always be gratefully acceptant of that, because, you know, I'm, or as we all are, we all try different stuff. And I think it's interesting about that energy thing, isn't it? Because, you know, generally speaking, It's about, if you're generally well, it's noticing if something really makes the difference. I think that's, yeah. You know, the exciting thing. I think generally speaking, though, the gut definitely, especially my gut definitely needs, I think all of us definitely need help on the gut.
Yeah.
You know, even if the function seems to be fine, you know, because we've got pollution, we've got stress. We, you know, we're living in very strange times. You know, even if you're the person on the absolute chill out scale, it's bound to affect you somehow. So I think the gut, definitely. The liver for me is a real interest, because I mean, although I seem perfectly fine, my liver could always do with a little helping hand. Of course.
Can I go one step back? Because you mentioned the gut again. I'm desperate to share the picture of the gut villi with you.
Oh, Cheryl.
Can I do it again?
Absolutely, yes.
Indulgent, aren't I?
Well, I think you deserve it. Why not?
Got to find it. Here we are. So let's go into presentation. And let's go directly to the... that's the one. Ooh. Lost the writing. There we go. So this is a picture here on the right. The top slide is the gut under a lot of stress. So this is a summation, if you like, and a representation of the work that we did with all the different stressed farm animals. That is what the villi gut lining look like if you have a lot of stress. And then 3 weeks after supplementation with nucleotides, beautiful branching, 25% higher villi, a lot more surface area, less lesions, so there's lots of lesions here, much more intact, and therefore much more of a uptake of nutrients through the gut. So I mean, to me, that says it all. And that's why we had confidence moving into humans. We knew that if we could do something similar to that, then we would have a good chance of having very effective products. And indeed, one of the reasons why we managed to get a grant to pay for a clinical trial with IBS participants was we were able to show, you know, like a study where we could have that sort of impact. So that's my indulgence. I'll stop there.
No, brilliant. And first of all, obviously you may be stocked at the natural dispensary and elsewhere, I believe. And also, can they go to you directly? How does it work?
Yeah, absolutely. People can either go through the wholesaler and natural dispensary, or they can come directly to me. And initially I would suggest to email me. You can contact me probably through the Nutrition Network even.
Yes, absolutely.
My email address will be somewhere in the system. I can even give it to you now. We will have very, very soon, and I will certainly inform you through the Nutrition Network, a new website up. And I will be providing suitable health practitioner discount codes to use on that. But initially, best way is to contact me, and then I can also provide the information that anyone might want as well.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic. And so, Rachel, what's your email, just so people have got it?
Yeah, it's rachel.hoyle@nucleotidenutrition.com.
And that's H-O-Y-L-E, isn't it?
Correct, yeah.
Yes. Great. Okay, so that's absolutely fantastic. So for now, and I just want you to stay there just for a minute, Rachel. We'll say goodbye to everybody else, but thank you so much. It's so interesting. I never tire of the magic of nutrition, actually. I really don't. You know, it's sort of like every corner you turn, there's something really exciting. you know, for me, because I trained so long ago, I trained in the last century, we definitely weren't talking about nucleotides. So for me, it's pretty new information. But I'm sure for the people who've trained more recently, perhaps this isn't such devastating news, or not devastating, whatever it is, amazing news. But you know, it's so exciting, really. Thank you so much for sharing that. And for now, pleasure. We'll say goodbye to everybody else. So thank you and goodbye.
Bye.